Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, or actually good afternoon, everybody here from Chicago, Illinois. In this podcast, we have the honor and privilege of welcoming Mr. Marco Alcala from Alcala Consulting, based out of Pasadena, California, one of the top managed service providers down that area. Now, Marco, we've had you on. Well, first of all, thank you for joining us and welcome aboard on the show today.
Thank you, Robbie. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's an honor. Now, we've had you before on another podcast, but in case for those listeners who may not have heard the first show, can you please give a brief background about yourself and about your company?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm Marco Alcala. Like you said, I'm the CEO of Alcala Consulting, a Pasadena-based managed IT services and cybersecurity company. I've been in business for over 25 years, and we become the one-stop shop for our customers or clients in terms of their IT support and cybersecurity.
Okay, excellent. Now, in our last podcast, Mark, I think we had touched on cyber insurance as one of the hot button topics for this year. In fact, probably going well into the next couple of years. And I think what piqued my curiosity even more was that you actually kind of helped clients with the paperwork. Now, cybersecurity insurance has kind of become a security blanket for just about anybody that is worried about cybersecurity, and especially for the SMB. But the cyber and security insurance policy has now become kind of like a security blanket. You know, kind of like Linus and PS with his little security blanket. But you may not get all the coverage that you want after you file a claim. That's kind of where people are getting confused. So to get started, can you walk us through the process of how you help a client with the paperwork for the cybersecurity insurance? So what kind of paperwork is involved, and can you give us a little more detail and oversight into that?
Yeah, so I asked my clients to send me their cyber liability insurance application, and I answer all the IT security related questions. So they fill out the first section. Yeah, the first section is going to be the company name, their address, and you know how many employees they have and what their annual revenues are. But then you know right after that, you know, they start seeing questions about email security, internal security controls, backup and disaster recovery, phishing controls, biometric information, and loss history. So I help them fill that out so they don't have to, you know, waste any time or be concerned about what it all means. Then once I fill it out, I explain to them, you know, what the gaps are, what controls they have and what controls they need to have so that, you know, they can have a better outcome in terms of renewing their cybersecurity policy.
Okay. What are the different pieces in that paperwork? I mean, are you involved in the whole process or just the cyber point?
In terms of what they got to answer? Is that what you want to know? Or
like in the application, obviously, they have to answer, you know, the basic company question, and then where you fill in the answers. But is there anything else that they have to fill out apart from those two major sections?
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of times they get a supplemental ransomware form, so they want to know about what kinds of controls they have in place to protect against ransomware, right? They're going to ask if they have multi-factor authentication for remote access and all the privileged accounts. They want to know if they have backups that they can use to restore in the event of a ransomware attack. They're also going to ask things like if they can recover within 10 days in the event of a ransomware attack, which is funny because on the average, it takes companies about 21 days to recover from a ransomware attack. So I don't know what the 10-day expectation is for recovering from a ransomware attack.
Okay. So it sounds like this paperwork is pretty exhaustive, am I correct?
It is. So on the average, I'm seeing applications that are about 5 pages long. And in some cases, they do a risk assessment with probably 100 questions. And, like an Excel spreadsheet, and they want to know all kinds of stuff about all the controls that you have in place, all of your IT security policies, how you handle change management, the network architecture, network security, the firewalls that you have, are they properly configured? Do you have intrusion prevention, malware control, server protection, workstation protection, vendor management, and all that stuff? So it can be very complicated for a person that doesn't deal with this on a daily basis to fill out. That's why I like to fill that out for them and then explain to them that what I did and what they need to have in place to secure coverage.
Okay. Now, is it true that the insurance carrier will actually come out and do an audit also, or do they just leave it up to the business owner to do that?
I haven't run into that. What they have asked some of our clients is to provide proof. They'll ask for proof that the systems are being maintained, right? So, for example, a patch compliance report that shows a list of all of their computers. And it shows which computers have been patched and which ones haven't. In some cases, they ask for screenshots of the firewall configuration. They expect to see certain things like a default deny all policy in the firewall, and it's things like that they want to see.
Okay. Now, Mark, when we get car insurance and medical insurance, for the most part, it's a comprehensive policy. Okay, there are no separate add-ons. But I've been reading lately that insurance carriers are now shying away from giving out a comprehensive policy. And instead now they're making SMB owners try and get add-on to the main insurance policy or riders for the extra protection, like you're saying, for ransomware, if they need it. What do you think, am I correct in that assumption? What do you think about that?
Yeah, they are limiting their exposure, right? So some insurance companies are not comfortable underwriting policies for technology errors and omissions, cyber business interruption. And some of them are limiting multimedia coverage. So yeah, they are putting restrictions in there to limit their exposure and to collect more money so that they're in a better position to make money instead of issuing a single comprehensive coverage that doesn't bring enough revenue for them in relation to the risk that they're assuming.
So each digital asset has to have their own add-on policy then. For example, servers will have to have their own, smartphones will have to have their own, or how do they divide up what's going to be separate and what's going to be comprehensive, if you know that?
No, I haven't run into that scenario where they do a separate policy for servers and mobile devices. It just hasn't come up in helping my clients.
Okay. Now, what is the success rate of getting a full payout? Because I've been reading stories where, as I said, I go back to that security blanket analogy where SMBs think, okay, well, I've got the cyber insurance policy. It's okay if I get hit. At least I'll get a full payout. But they may not get a full payout. So have you had any cases where your clients, if there's the unfortunate chance that they were breached, that they didn't get a full payout?
Knock on wood, my clients have not had to file any claims so far.
Oh, good. Okay, but have you heard of maybe other maybe colleagues in your industry that, the client filed a claim and that they didn't get a full payout?
I have. There are many reasons why a claim is going to be denied, right? But just to give you some examples, you know, one that comes to mind is failure to maintain. So if you're not maintaining the adequate security controls, if you're not patching the computers, or if you don't have your firewalls configured properly, that's mm-hmm. going to be a reason why your claim is going to be denied. Another that comes to mind is not having the controls that you put on the application, right? So if you say, I have MFA on the application turned on, and then you get hit and you didn't have it turned on as you claimed on the application, well, that's going to be a denial of a claim for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, before, as you said, that the insurance companies are making the SMB owner kind of like do a walkthrough, a checklist of what they have and what they don't have. And obviously, they're going to have to fill in the gaps of what they don't have in terms of controls. Do you actually help them put those controls in place, or do you rely more on a chief compliance officer to do that, or do you kind of work hand-in-hand with that person, or how does that work?
Yeah, we help them put all the security controls in.
Okay. Now, what are some of the better insurance carriers that your clients have dealt with, and do you have like a list of companies that you may recommend? Or?
Some of the better insurance companies out there that we have seen are Hiscox, Chubb, and AIG. There are a ton of insurance companies out there, you know, and others that come to mind, you know, that we get to see would be Beazley, you know, that are part of the Lloyd's of London syndicate. We don't specifically recommend the insurance companies to our clients. We actually tell them to work with a broker that is going to work on representing their interests in securing a policy that a cyber insurance policy that meets their needs.
Okay. What do you think of like the State Farms and Nationwides? Do they offer comprehensive cybersecurity coverage like they do for car insurance, or theirs is more kind of like you kind of like pick and choose what you need?
Yeah, I don't have any experience with them, so unfortunately I wouldn't be able to answer that question. I'm sorry.
No worries. Because I've been hearing stories, you know, you don't like want to go this far in for cybersecurity insurance because it's not like specialized or comprehensive, like as you said, like the Hiscox. I'll do a little bit more I'll dig deeper into that one here in a little while. Now, you had mentioned that that ransomware is something that they may not give a payout for. In fact, AXA, I think that French insurance carrier, they're not giving payouts if you've been hit with the ransomware attack in the case that you actually made a ransomware payment. What are your thoughts on that? Isn't that kind of extreme? I mean, shouldn't you help the person out if they didn't know what they were doing right to begin with? Or I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of the road.
So that's very interesting. So that case you mentioned, that's the one for Merck, right, where AXA didn't want to – well, initially they said we're not going to pay because this is an attack conducted by a nation state. So acts of war are not covered. And so there's litigation going on right now because you know, there wasn't specific language in that policy that said that a cyber attack is an act of war. So they're going back and forth with that one. You know, going forward, you know, the cyber insurance companies are going to be very specific about not paying for ransomware attacks if they happen to be a case of cyber terrorism or an attack launched by, you know, by a cyber operations outfit that is by a nation state. So I think that in most cases nowadays, it's cheaper to pay the ransom than to restore everything from back. Yeah. But I'm going to give you some examples, right, that have been in the news and most people know about. But, you know, take the city of Atlanta. They suffered an attack in 2018. They had cyber insurance, right? And the ransom that they were asked to pay was $52,000, but, you know, they spent like $12 million to recover the data. You know, they basically had a policy that they're not going to encourage ransomware attacks, so they were not going to pay the ransom. But that's a huge difference, right? $52,000 versus $12 million. It's a no-brainer if you're willing to compromise on the principle of not encouraging these cyber gangs. But, you know, there's a couple of other examples that I can think of. Well, actually, three more. But the city of Baltimore in 2019, they also suffer a ransomware attack. The ransom demanded was $76,000, and they spent over $7 million to recover the data. Now, those guys didn't have cyber liability insurance, but they decided they weren't going to pay the ransom. Last year, it was crazy for ransomware, as you know, right? JVS, the Brazilian meat processing company, they paid $11 million for that ransom. Who knows what it would cost a multinational like that one to restore everything from backup, but, you know, it would probably be more than that, you know, to recover from that kind of attack. And then closer to home, you know, the Colonial Pipeline attack, you know, they paid $5 million for that ransom to get the encryption keys. And fortunately, the FBI recovered some of that money, like over $2 million. But yeah, I understand the idea of not wanting to pay the ransom to not encourage future attacks. But, you know, it's hard to tell whether not paying the ransom is going to be an effective deterrent for future attacks, because I think they're going to keep on doing them anyway.
Well, now, when we talked last time, you know, unfortunately, we didn't predict the situation like we have right now where Russia has invaded the Ukraine. And now there could be more, that there's a very good chance that there could be even more ransomware attacks or more deadlier and even stealthier. Should the insurance, in your view, in your professional view, don't you think that they should kind of break these companies that have been hit, given these new circumstances, and kind of help them a little bit more with the payout rather than simply saying no?
Yeah, well, if it's like an isolated incident, I see them paying it. But, you know, if it's something that affects most of their insureds, you know, then, you know, it becomes a capital event for them. And, you know, so they're not going to be able to pay all the claims if it's affecting their, you know, most of their customer base. So there's a balance, you know, where, you know, they can pay a few claims, but not, say, 70 or 80% of all their insureds if it's a widespread attack, which could happen if there's spillover with, you know, some of these attacks that are being launched out of Russia. They could spill onto other countries and wipe out entire industries or a lot of critical infrastructure for an entire country or more. So,
wow. Okay. Now, is it true that the premiums for cybersecurity insurance are going up? And so, like, how much does it really – like, what's the typical cost for your for, like, an SMB client for to get a good cyber policy, a good comprehensive one? What are the monthly costs like, if you can share that information?
Yeah, you know, it's gonna vary depending on the company that issues the policy. But, you know, just to give you an example, I've seen quotes for about, you know, slightly over $4,000 or $2 million of insurance if all the required controls are in place, right? If, you know, they don't have MFA for remote access and they don't have MFA for privileged accounts, there isn't a SIEM in place and other controls that they want to see, you know, the cost of that policy is going to be $11,000 or more. So
wow.
You can expect to pay a lot more if you're not providing the cybersecurity controls that are going to reduce their exposure.
Okay, wow, that's quite a bit. Now, after you submit the paperwork, how long does it take for an SMB owner to be awarded the actual policy? Is it automatic same day, or does it take time, given the extra paperwork and all the controls review?
Yeah, if they have all the controls in place and there's a risk assessment that has been already taken care of. So after the risk assessment is done, it can take anywhere from 30 to 90 days to get the actual policy in the wow. hands of the company.
Now, are these annual policies, or can they kind of spread them out?
The ones I've seen are all annual. Yeah, so you know, you get the policy before you actually get the policy. When you get the certificate of insurance, you get an invoice along with that, and you got to pay it up front.
Oh well, okay. Well, Marco, like when an SMB client approaches you, one of your clients, for example, they approach you about cybersecurity insurance, and assuming that they don't have anything, what are the typical questions they ask you in the beginning?
They go, can you fill this out for me? Because I don't understand all these questions. And I go, yeah, please let me fill it out for you. But then what I do after I filled out an application, I'll do like a Zoom call with them, and you know, we'll go over every question so they understand how these security controls work and why they should have them and they don't have them.
Okay. Now, as you wrap up our show, Marco, is there any other advice that you could provide to people out there that are mulling cybersecurity insurance? Or if they have it, like what are some of the best practices that they can do? Now, I mean, I've written quite a bit about it. I've written a whole book about it, and it all comes down to just being proactive and not simply just thinking of that you're going to be covered when, you know, because you have that security blanket. What tips and advice do you have to give to people like that?
I tell them to find a good insurance broker that is going to help them understand what kind of coverage they should have based on their business needs. So it's just better that they get help from a professional, somebody that deals with that on a daily basis. And then just follow the recommendations that we give them in terms of implementing the security controls. And with those things, you know, they're in a much better position going forward to get the coverage they want, and also to be in a position to get a payout in the unfortunate event that a claim is filed.
Okay. What are some of the names of the insurance brokers that your clients deal with? Do you have any top names that come across your mind?
Yeah. One of them would be, let me see, I'm going to pull a couple of the applications here that the clients have sent me. One of them is Tokio Marine, HHC. I get to see that one a lot. Yeah, they're in. They have an office in California, and since my clients are in California, that's why I get to see that one a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, there are others, but I have to go and pull the applications to see.
Reason.
But most of the time, I see Tokio Marine.
Okay.
HHC.
Okay, excellent. Well, Marco, as we wrap up the show here. Obviously, cybersecurity insurance is going to become, you know, more complex given the way the threat landscape is unfolding these days, minute by minute. People are going to have questions. They're going to probably have even be more confused. They'll want good advice. What is the best way for someone to contact you to get advice, or if they just need your help? You're going to have this whole maze of cybersecurity.
Well, I have three ways that they can contact us. So the first one would be by phone, 626-449-5549. The number again is 626-449-5549. They can also send that an email at info@alcalaconsulting.com, or they can just visit our website and fill out the contact us form at www.alcalaconsulting.com.
Okay, excellent. Now, will you work with others that are across state lines, or just primarily work with people that are local to your area?
Yeah, you know, we have some clients that have offices across state lines because, you know, they're doing distribution or manufacturing. And in many cases, they also have operations overseas, like in Europe. So, yeah, we get to deal with that just because of the nature of business nowadays.
Well, Mark, we thank you very much for your time. I think you've shed some really good insights of what it means for an SMB owner to kind of go through this process. And I'm glad that you really help your clients out like that. As I said to you in our last podcast, I think you're the first cyber vendor or MSP that I know that will actually walk through the paperwork with their clients. So my hat's off to you on that. I wish more MSPs would take that lead from you. So
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Marco. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you on a future podcast.
Have a great day. Bye now.